Good afternoon, Patriot Pals. Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I am very honored to have back a man that is so inspiring to me. His story of his daughter, Grace, really changed my perspective on why I fight and what we're fighting for. And I'm really honored to have back Scott Sarsa about his daughter, Grace. And he is brought with him today an amazing woman, Vera Sharav. And they have teamed up together because they have a joint mission that has grown. So I wanted everyone to meet them and to hear again a little bit. If you haven't seen my show with Scott, you can go back and see the original one. But Scott, can you just catch us up and fill in my audience that doesn't know you yet on your story and a little bit about Grace and why we're fighting?
Sure. So thanks for the nice introduction, Mel. It's always very kind when you say stuff like that. And it's really great to see you again. So Grace was my best buddy. She was 19 years old when she died. Grace had Down syndrome. She was extremely high functioning. And she just was, she had a love of God that was unbelievable. She called me earthly dad, as you might remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, her sense of humor was beyond, you know, she got things. She was just a naturally funny kid. She saw things. And I have a sense of humor. I haven't had much since she died, but I mean, it still comes out. But she could see things that were, you know, so obvious, but she would see it through the lens of humor. And right. I'll just share a quick one so that people can get back into the fold with her. So, you know, she would, if she met you for the first time, Mel, she might say, would you like to hear my dirty jokes? And of course you would say, well, sure, Grace, what do you have there? And she'd say, well, Mel, why didn't the toilet paper cross the road? And then you'd say, well, I don't know. Why didn't it cross the road? And she'd say, well, because it got stuck in the crack.
I know. No, I saw videos and your daughter shared with me some, she seemed like such an amazing girl and she was so full of life. And it's unbelievable to me. I feel like she's still here because every time I see you and I see you on other shows and I hear you speak and I think of when I spent time with your other daughter, you know, it just seems like this fight is way bigger than us. It seems like it's her fight and she's still fighting. So tell my audience a little bit about what happened to Grace.
So Grace went into the hospital on October 6th with COVID, with low oxygen, and she did not die of COVID. Right. They did three different things to take Grace out. They put her on a sedation drug called Presidex. And that drug is only supposed to be used for 24 hours max, according to the package insert. They used it for 4.5 days on Grace. And in fact, most recently, this is about a month ago, I was on Stu Peters and he wanted to talk about Presidex. And so I drilled it down and remembered that there was a reference on Grace's death certificate. And it said that the primary cause of death was acute respiratory failure. Well, if you look at the package insert for Presidex, you'll see that acute respiratory failure is one of the direct causes of using Presidex for more than 24 hours. Then 2 days ago, I was just reading a research paper by A.J. DePriest, who has done the best job of anyone drilling down the money trail, and found out the hospital got a bonus of $7,500 for listing the cause of death as acute respiratory failure. And of course, they also listed the second cause of death of COVID-19 pneumonia. So they got another $13,000 bonus. So they got $20,500 just in bonus money just for taking Grace out. And it's significantly worse than that. The second cause of death, which is the real cause of death, is they took Presidex, combined it with lorazepam and morphine in a series of 29 minutes. And that combination of meds would have taken any of us out. It was impossible to survive that. So, and, you know, so you think, well, could that have just been malpractice? And this is maybe the most significant event since I talked with you last, Mel, is about 6 weeks ago, or maybe a little bit longer than that. And this ultimately gets into meeting Vera. So it may have been already 8 weeks ago. I concluded that Grace's death was premeditated murder. And I'm I'm very analytical. So it took a lot for me to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And this series of meds that in that 29 minutes, not only, and what really got me there was this: the doctor had to order the meds. The pharmacist had to sign off on the order, because the package insert for morphine says to not combine those meds because they're contraindicated, right, and cause death. The alarm had to be shut down. And then the nurse who was in charge of Grace's care that day was a 14-year experienced ICU nurse. So, I mean, you can't make that up. And then, you know, the third cause of death, which is really the most easy to pin on the illegal actions of the hospital, was that the doctor put a DNR order on Grace, right, without our permission. And we found out back in April that he put that DNR order on her at 10:56, the morning of her last day, 8 minutes after they maxed out the Presidex. And one of the attorneys who reviewed the document said that in order for them to accomplish the goal with Grace, which we've come to believe was to take her out, they had to put that DNR order in place that fast to cover their tracks. It was only 8 minutes after they maxed out the Presidex. I mean, that DNR order violated 7 different state statutes.
Yeah, I mean, the worst part is I've had on Erin, Nurse Erin from New York that has been out there a lot. She saw it over and over. The worst part is that, first of all, you went in with her and then they said that you got COVID, so you had to leave her. And again, she had Down syndrome, but she was high functioning. So it wasn't, but she still needed a family member with her. So then your daughter came, and your daughter, so the family, if there was a DNR, your daughter was there. You were there when they were set. So this was, but this DNR thing and that cocktail, because I have a scientist on my show, Mike L, he's found that was given out all over this country multiple times, probably hundreds of thousands of times. And everyone that gave it knew. They had to have known, or you know, there's to some extent. And the other thing that you first started, I think, putting out there, and Erin did too, was get the records of the, right, financials, get the insurance records, get all of that. You were one of the first people. I remember when Tom Renz called me and he told me about you and said, you got to get in touch with this guy. The story has to be out there. People didn't realize it, but anyone that's watching this right now, if you had a family member die in the hospital, you must get their records, not just their records, but the insurance records, because, right, Scott, it's really hard to understand the motivation here. It's so layered, but I mean, this is hundreds of thousands of people out there are living through what you're living through and don't even know that their loved one shouldn't be dead, that it wasn't COVID. And so tell me how you two connected.
Well, ultimately what happened was after, you know, I started wondering, was this genocide? And you might remember I had looked at the doctor's reports and found out they referenced that Grace had Down syndrome 36 different times. Well, after I was convinced it was premeditated murder, you start looking into genocide. Well, genocide leads you into World War II. And so Kevin, our PR director, and I started researching the Holocaust. And in the research of the Holocaust, we started this in a big way. I mean, every day, every waking minute was on this. And then I saw a podcast that Vera did with Alex Newman. And so then it dawned, I thought to myself, I mean, why would anybody listen to a dad who did Holocaust research when you have this lady, yeah, who knows everything? And so then I asked Kevin to get a hold of her, and, you know, he tried emailing and contacting, wasn't able to do that. So, you know, I just have this foolish way about me. So I decided to Google her, and this phone number comes up. And so this was on July 8th. And so I just decided to call, and this lady starts quizzing me. I said, I'd like to talk with Vera. And she asked me a bunch of questions, and ultimately I must have passed the test. And then she says, well, I'm Vera. And so then her and I became fast friends, and we've had many, many discussions now, long ones. And I just have come to, I'm starstruck yet, just even.
I know, we're very lucky to have Vera. I've been looking for her for months too. So I was like, what?
I
love Alex Newman, and I saw her on there as well. And myself, I, I am a big, I have family that died in the Holocaust, but I also have, I used to be a screenwriter, and I wrote a screenplay about Eichmann in Jerusalem and the trial of Adolf Eichmann. And just recently, some recordings of him that were hidden all these years came out that are just, of what I knew. I wrote it really about Hannah Arendt, but of him saying exactly what I'm seeing right now happening in America, which scares me, because we appear to have a very rogue system here where the patriots and the people telling the truth, and it's almost exactly like Nazi Germany, like are the domestic terrorists. And there is a group of people that are persecuting truth tellers. And again, the whole thing with that was they're just following orders. And that's what I'm seeing. So Vera, tell my audience a little bit about you, because I think a lot of people don't realize that or don't want to know that evil exists. And they need to know. And I'm so grateful you're here. There's so few people out there that really can articulate it the way you can. So please tell my audience about you.
Well, since the COVID outbreak, I wind up being essentially identified as Holocaust survivor. I've had, though, decades of experience dealing with the healthcare system in the United States. So I knew a lot of the corruption, and I also was aware about how some people are denigrated as expendable.
Right.
And that includes the mentally ill, disabled, and children. We need to sort of keep those categories in mind, because they're very much in the forefront of the casualties in COVID. But when COVID hit, when the lockdowns and the constant state of fear that was put upon all of us, that sort of rang a bell, you know, that right away. Now, I was just a child when we were deported from Romania. I was 3 and a half, and we were herded into a concentration camp in Ukraine.
Right.
Where I was there for 3 years. My father died at the camp within a year. And a great deal of what I experienced was, of course, it was starvation. This was not an annihilation camp. This was not a death camp. It was a sort of a way station to the camps. There were really 42,000 camps all over Europe. I mean, people really all think as if Auschwitz was the only one. No, it wasn't. You know, the Holocaust evolved in stages, very slow stages. And that's what we're going through now. And it's not going to happen. They won't be extermination gas and all that. That's for them. That was the weapons then. Today we have technology. We have very sophisticated technology, which can do it without the gore, right? But the dead bodies are already piling up.
Right.
Now, one of the things that struck immediately was the way in March of 2020, all Western European countries, Australia, Canada, at least 5 states in the United States, got rid of the elderly in nursing homes. The governments in all those countries gave orders to hospitals not to treat. It includes Sweden, everywhere.
Right, everywhere that's controlled by the Fourth Reich, I call them. Yeah.
Well, they saw an opportunity to get rid of, number one, an economic burden.
Right.
The insurance companies were delighted. Obviously, they no longer had to pay out anything. And at the same time, it began the way the in the Nazi time. Now, you see, the Holocaust is focused totally and entirely on Jews, which were the main target as far as annihilating the entire ethnic group. However, Jews were not the only ones targeted. And I would like to just tell people who don't know that the very first medical murder victims in Nazi Germany, they were German infants and children under the age of 3. Their crime was they were disabled in some form. So they took away those children from their families, lied to the families, told them they were going to get special treatment to improve their health. They were taken to hospital wards that became killing stations. And they were murdered with exactly, you know, similar injections as Grace had.
Right.
The families were then given death certificates signed by medical doctors who stated that they died of natural causes. Some of the babies and children were tortured in that they were starved so the doctors could record how long a little child can survive without nourishment. The important parallel that I have drawn between the Holocaust and that mentality, the culture that made it possible, was the collaboration of the medical establishment.
Right.
Today, it's the same thing. You would not have the casualties or the isolation and the lockdowns and the all the nonsense surrounding COVID, which is dehumanizing,
right,
without the medical establishment giving their seal of approval.
Yeah.
This is terribly important because medicine has once again been subverted to become a weapon.
Yep.
When medicine is weaponized, you know, you really have to watch out because number one, of course, people, they go like sheep because they trust doctors. And it's a horrible thing for me to have to convince people, do not trust doctors or authorities or anyone to run your life, to make your life choices for you and your children. You are, if you're an adult, you're responsible for yourself and your family. That comes first. And the idea, the way they have propagandized people and children to feel as though they could kill grandma.
Right. I know.
Wow. What a guilt trip that would be. And that was all a lie. Every single thing that we were told to do was a lie. It began with the lie that some, you know, 2.5 million Americans were going to die of COVID. No such thing.
Right.
That scaremongering kind of terrorized President Trump at the time because he didn't know anything about any of this. And he, you know, was afraid. Same thing, Boris Johnson. I mean, they were all just, that's the point. At the very best, people who can't believe evil, true evil, I know true evil, which is why I can recognize it. But if you can't recognize evil, then, you know, then you are very malleable. And your obedience is what gives them power. Without people obeying whatever they tell you, they don't have power. We are the many.
Right. You know, a lot of people say to me, because I do a lot about this. First of all, people don't really know that this, that people don't understand that people in Nazi Germany, I always say in my talks, when I speak, it's usually who are the puppet masters? And I talk about the Operation Paperclip and how a lot of Nazis that we thought were brought to justice were really brought through Argentina into America and put all over America, especially the UN and a lot of this stuff, that it's a lot of the same families, bloodlines that are right now involved in this. Yes. Eugenicists that go all the way back to Huxley and the entire, you know, Himmler, Hitler, Mengele, the whole thing. But what people don't know, when people ask, like, why didn't they fight back or this and that? It is true that in the beginning they used typhus, and they were saying that you had to go quarantine in ghettos first, that you get people here in Warsaw Ghetto. But like you're saying, there were like hundreds of, it wasn't just Warsaw Ghetto and that was it. They were all over Europe. And that was the first step. And once you got into the ghetto, then it was easier. And then from there, it would be like, well, you're just going to go to the quarantine camp for treatment. But there did come a point where people knew it was too late, but they had already lost their will to fight by the time. But I think in the beginning, a lot of people that did willingly get on trains and move to ghettos did exactly what you're saying. They thought that it was for the good of the others, rather than, or to keep others safe.
One of the things is also the fact that there were collaborators. And we have to really understand this. There are collaborators who are they enable,
right,
the ones who really run the show. And leaders of the Jewish community told them, oh, no, don't, Hitler doesn't mean what he said. You see, Jews from Germany could have left. For 5 years, the gates were open.
Right.
Hitler only closed it in 1939. He took power in 1933. That's quite a while.
Is that when the Nuremberg Laws started in 1933?
1933 was, yeah.
Right. That's when they started.
They were disenfranchised. Right. Yes, Jews were disenfranchised. And it was all very slow. You know, the universities were cleaned of Jews.
Right.
And then, of course, the properties were taken away, confiscated. Children couldn't go to school. It went on very gradually. In part, Hitler was waiting to see what would be the reaction. And as Elie Wiesel, who for while he lived was pretty much the spokesman for the survivors, he was right, an Auschwitz survivor, a Nobel laureate.
Yep.
He said, it was the silence of the majority that really caused. Right.
I say a quote from him a lot of times on my show, that it was it wasn't the convinced Nazi the convinced Nazi or the committed communist. It was the apathetic German that allowed it to happen. And I feel like that we're here right now in America, at least during the COVID lockdowns, because I saw a lot of that stuff too. I kept saying, you know, Hitler and Himmler and Goebbels are looking up from hell thinking, wow, they're really, really good, that they've really gotten great at brainwashing people. And that Hadar Arendt was one of the people that I studied for years and I wrote about. And she too said what you said, which was there were people within the community that were giving over their congregants information and stuff, thinking that they would be spared and their families would be spared, but they only went last. And that's what I keep saying about here to everyone, that, you know, yeah, right now they're silencing me and they're blocking everyone and they're censoring this and that. Well, why are they doing that? They're doing that because if you don't have the information and you keep following along and getting your boosters and following the doctors, which were all hijacked by the same people from Operation Paperclip and Rockefeller and all them, just like big pharma, big medicine, they're like you're saying, there's a lot of enablers, but we've been told to trust those people. And they were told that in Germany too, and they did. And for some reason, I don't know, do you think that they've corrupted the education so much and haven't taught the history that people just, it was exactly the same playbook. Still is.
It's more refined. It's refined because the technology is so much more powerful. Now, another major player in the Holocaust was IBM.
Right.
Okay. IBM, without IBM and without doctors, there would have been no Holocaust. There would have been some murders for sure, but there would not have been that grand scale. It would not have been an industrialized Holocaust the way it was. And I want to emphasize IBM provided the technology, the precursor to computers. It was a punch card technology, which required a lot of manpower to fix it all the time, but it did its job. IBM conducted the census in Germany and all over Europe and accumulated that database. That database became the weapon for identifying every Jew in Europe to be able to then grab them, deport them, send them to the camps. The tattoos from Auschwitz were IBM numbers.
Right.
They tracked them even in the camps. Now, and they ran the trains, the train schedules, so that the trains came loaded with people and empty and load. No time wasted. IBM was chosen by the same Governor Cuomo, who is responsible for 15,000 deaths, the elderly in New York State. And their Excelsior passport was the one chosen. Okay. And in New York, that's what you had to use for quite a while now, right? IBM. Now, this is chilling. This is really chilling because this really tells you it's a continuum.
Right.
Hasn't stopped.
That's what I say all the time. It's the same people. It's the same. They told us, they're telling us. I'm in New York too. And I will tell you when they instituted that and all my, and I, the craziest part, you're here too. You think that there's so many intellectuals here, you know, they all have the degrees and they went to this, the Ivy League schools. I call it now after this last 2.5 years, the poison Ivy League schools, but they, all of this, all the people I thought were the smartest, you know, that work at the banks and stuff. They're lining up for their shots. They're downloading the Excelsior Pass. They can't wait for Cuomo's next press conference. And I'm sitting there being like, this is the same playbook as Nazi Germany. And I refuse to do that. And you know what's crazy? And I'm sure you know this. We started being, because we wouldn't do it. I wouldn't download anything. I wasn't getting the shot. I had known, I'd had on the frontline doctors. I knew a lot more than most. And, we started being shunned. We did. We started being treated like second-class citizens by people we considered friends. We weren't allowed into places that we went to every day or every couple days a week. We live in New York, so we eat out a lot.
Yes.
We weren't allowed into our restaurant that we were at 3 days a week for 5-6 years. People were actually yelling at us for not wearing masks or, you know, or they'd know, or they wouldn't. People that would normally like come up and hug you would cross the street. This was really happening in real time. Did you see that in New York too?
Of course.
I couldn't believe it. I had to leave. It was that bad.
Well, I realized, you know, that again, you see, and some immediately said, because there was always the question, how could the German people who at the time were the highest culturally,
That's true.
They were really the elite in the world. And how could they have let this happen? How could they have allowed this butchery? And some started to say, how here? You're seeing it right now.
Right, exactly. Wasn't it amazing?
We need to know. We need to understand human nature. And, you know, when you said education before, this has been really a concerted effort. The education. And I think it's all over the West, but certainly we know in America, you know, children and university students are taught to trust authority, to regurgitate what the professor is telling them, rather than critical thinking, making decisions on their own, making mistakes, learning from their own mistakes, but absorbing their own experience along with the book learning. The book learning is useless if you don't evaluate, you know. And so from very, very small age, children are taught to obey. Just look at these nursery school children all through K-12. They're all wearing masks.
Unbelievable.
And this is their undoing. Little children haven't even learned to pronounce words because they don't see the lips.
Right. And Scott, for the people that were, you were you were treating your daughter. It's really very disturbing, but I don't know, Vera, if you've seen this, but when I was really studying this, I saw pictures of Nazi guards playing cards and drinking beer. And you can see the smokestacks in the back. That was at Dachau, I think, at Auschwitz. But these people went home to mm-hmm. their families. And I mean, you were in an in-between camp. But once you got to those camps, those people were sadistic. They were mm-hmm. evil. They got off on it. And, you know, men and women, we have to remember there were a lot of women working in those camps. But they went home to their children and mm-hmm. to their families as if it was just a job. Like Eichmann said, I was following orders. I was a good soldier and I would do it again. And he said that to the very end. And we have to understand, Scott, you were dealing with doctors there. You and your daughter, there was nothing you could say. They were acting as if they were just following orders. And Grace's life was just, you know, it didn't matter because they had a protocol that they had to follow. Right.
Well, when you talk with Jess also, I have to compartmentalize the story for these interviews, but she can't do that. She goes right back to the room. And when she's in that room, she just tells me about the evil that she saw in their eyes. And then when you frame this, you know, this is where, you know, I'm analytical, and ultimately that piece of me got me to meet Vera. But, you know, studying Hannah Arendt's work also, which I haven't done any of the.
Oh, I was obsessed with it for 20 years.
I can't hold a candle to you guys, but what the phrase that she used, which I want to apply specifically to Grace, is the banality of evil. And so when I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, this is exactly how they could take Grace out and not even think about it, you know, go home to their families that night. So if you process the banality of evil relative to just Down syndrome kids, but this is all over. So the banality of evil means it's so commonplace. So now for at least 3-4 decades, when a young person gets pregnant, the doctor encourages her to have an amnio. So then if the child has Down syndrome, specifically, Down syndrome children are aborted 67% of the time right now in the United States. Yeah, when Grace was born, you know, I was in the delivery room. I thought, well, we didn't do any of the tests. And she came. I thought, I think she has Down syndrome. You know, thought, well, that's kind of neat. The doctors came in and said, we suspect your daughter has Down syndrome. Do you want to keep her? And that didn't mean kill her, but they just assumed we would not want her.
Well, I hear now in California, they're trying to make it that would be possible, which is crazy.
Well, I understand. So it just process these.
It's getting worse.
We have young medical staff that think Down syndrome children are already worthless because of the banality of evil and any disability. So it's not just Down syndrome children, it's the disabled. You know, the number one and number two causes of death with COVID in the hospital are elderly and disabled.
Right.
And of course, the media blames it on a comorbidity, but being elderly or disabled is not a comorbidity. It's on purpose. And it's because of the banality of evil.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, we can't forget that what's scary to me for both of you, I wonder if you feel the same, because I've studied that for a long time, the banality of evil, meaning that people are following orders or they're not even thinking that they're evil. And, you know, Hannah Arendt had a big problem with the trial of Eichmann, because she said he looked too normal to be, like, even at this point, he was just like a nebbishy, glasses, just a nothing. And she's thinking, like, how could that be that, you know? And I think that we really have to, because I am at a point where I believe that, A, we're fighting the Fourth Reich and it's a global thing, and that they are hellbent on getting rid of as many of us as they can to have their next phase of what they want the world to look like. Because I don't think, I say a lot in my talks that Germany might have lost the war, but the Nazis didn't. And I believe that that's who we're still fighting in a sense. It's certainly a lot of their heirs and their offspring, and they were groomed here. But the other thing is, I am watching a lot of law enforcement, Department of Justice, rogue cops, because they're getting rid of all the good cops, following orders and violating the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and everything, you know, and God and their own, what you would hope would be a conscience, because I am seeing a lot of banality of evil, not just from the horrible phase in the hospital, but I'm watching it in the justice system right now. And, you know, Vera and I live in New York City. They're not arresting people. They're letting people out and to reoffend and reoffend, I think, to terrorize us and to cause this chaotic dystopia. But, you know, Vera, what do you think about the idea that, you know, this is a mass terror event on top of everything else?
Absolutely. They're trying to destroy civilization in every aspect. They're trying to destroy the family. They're trying to destroy everything that's human. And they pretend, they have the audacity to pretend that they are God, and right. They're reinventing everything. They're reinventing climate. They're reinventing the people. And that's that transhumanism. Oh, totally. They're absolutely intent on getting rid of everything that God means. And, you know, in its many facets, every right. religion, whatever. But in other words, anything that isn't technological or, you know, that you can't statistically measure. If you can't measure it, then it doesn't exist. That's their whole. So there's really no place for anything higher than the physical. That's a very, very poor, small universe when you think about it.
Right.
Because,
you know,
when we say humans are in the image of God, that makes us, you know, it's like open to everything. And they want to close everything down, keep right. it under control. That's what they want. It's control.
Right.
By the way, I do want to tell you, though, that as far as banality of evil, while it's true that there's the banality, but Eichmann was essentially a good actor, a German historian, only about 5 years ago. I don't, you know, I'm very bad with names, so I can't. But she got a hold of Eichmann's diaries in Ooh. Argentina.
Well, oh, I did a lot of work on that. Yeah, he claimed he loved the Jews.
He was really a committed Nazi in a philosophical way. So he wasn't this little pencil pusher, which he tried to portray, you know, in
right.
Jerusalem. That was an act. That was, you know, it didn't work, but, you know, that was his
act. Oh, he was such an actor. Yeah, such an actor.
But, you know, I mean, this is, again, you know, people, one of the things that I think that the cabal has a big problem with is people like us, because really human beings are unpredictable. They can control the whole, but they can't control individuals, and they don't know which individuals, you know, are going to give them trouble. So, you know, I mean, this is kind of, it gives us certain power. On the other hand, we are also in the way of the whole idea of eliminating so many of the human species, because we're the control.
Right.
Those of us who don't get the shots are the control that Pfizer tried to get rid of in their only, you know, trial before unleashing this on the masses.
Right.
Immediately got rid of the control and gave them the vaccine. Why? That's totally against all scientific proper procedure, right?
Right.
But they didn't want controls because they knew very well that these were not injections to improve health or to protect against viruses.
Why did you, I know that you chose, you actually had run a foundation that has been doing this for decades. You chose a long time ago, you're not new to this. You chose a long time ago to look into medical, this kind of medical tyranny.
Yep.
When you started your, what is your foundation called?
Alliance for Human Research Protection.
It's so amazing that when you started this a long time ago, so you must have seen this coming like a freight train.
No, not quite. You know, in other words, I knew that the medical establishment, everything about it, all the institutions were totally under the sway of the pharmaceutical industry, that essentially they write the guidelines and then doctors have to follow them. Doctors, and now we saw with COVID where doctors were being delicensed for saving lives, for using medicines that save lives, safe and effective for decades.
Right.
They were actually, and many others, you know, they felt they were threatened.
Yeah.
Their careers, everything. So you have to say why. Who's controlling this? Now, okay, there are several intertwined motives going on. For people like Pfizer and Moderna, I mean, the money is just rolling. I mean, they double in 1 year, double of their whole, that's Pfizer. So the money is a huge factor. And the money has bought them the other institutions. It bought them the media. It bought them academia. It bought them the medical journals.
Right.
And it bought them medical schools.
Yep. And the medical and the AMA, the licensing.
Oh, they were early too. On. They
right.
The AMA way back, at least 10, 15 years ago, sold the list of doctors with their prescribing number to pharmaceutical companies.
Oh.
And at that time, they sold it for $10 million. I mean, my God, that's worth billions, you know.
Yeah.
So it enabled the pharmaceutical companies to send their reps.
Wow.
To hound those that weren't prescribing enough of their latest drug. That's how it works.
Right. And also, it seems to me, my sister's a doctor, so I'm not talking about her. But
no.
It seems to me that a lot of doctors, after they're done medical school, their education from that point on are pharmaceutical reps.
Yeah.
You know, that's seems
right.
to be how it goes, which is how I think what happened with Grace, that these people, do I think that all of the doctors were evil and knew what they were doing? No, but I think a lot at some point had to have known. But mm-hmm. again, I believe that, you know, Scott is a little different because I think that the people involved in the room that Grace was in knew what they were doing. I thought it from the very beginning. But I do think that a lot of these people were educated on COVID from the pharmaceutical reps. But then also the other thing that happened with you, Scott, is the hospital is part of that's another big thing that happened here that I'm sure you do in your work too, Vera, is that the hospitals have become huge corporate conglomerates.
Absolutely.
So it's a business, you know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, a CEO and a board that has nothing to do with patients or patient care or humanity at all, really, is really calling the shots. So yeah. Scott, your situation was the hospital was part of that.
And so shortly after Grace died, in October, in January is when I did the money trail research, and
right.
the hospital Grace died at was part of Ascension Hospital System, which is 142 hospitals. And when I did the deep dive into the money, I concluded that there's, you know, we've got the money, immunity from liability, and the shroud of secrecy, because most family members are not in the hospital. So you've got this
right.
thing that, it's such a temptation. And in the case of the Ascension Hospital System, which Grace died in, the first year of COVID, so from March 2020 to March 2021, they received $10 billion in bonus payments from the government. And, you know, nationwide, that number is $4 trillion that the hospitals have received. You know, and as Vera is very well connected with, she has explained that the reparations from World War I is what pushed Hitler into power. Well, look at
World War II. I know.
Yeah, look
I think we're still dealing with that same money. It goes right through the Bank of International Settlements, as far as I can see.
Yeah,
but, it's the same people.
Well, big in so take that money trail to even a bigger picture. The disabled and the elderly in the United States account for 39% of the federal budget. And August 31st, 2021, Medicare trustee report said, you know, there's something substantial that has to be done. And of course, I'm emphasizing the word substantial because I believe substantial means take these population groups out.
Right.
So that we can balance the budget.
You know, that really sparks something in me. I remember two things. Somebody I'm not a fan of named Zeke Emanuel. He created the Obama Obamacare, which really hurt me because my premiums went up because I had a pre-existing condition. And, you know, they cover you, but they'll bankrupt you also. But Zeke Emanuel, he came out when he was architecting the Obamacare, and he said people that live past 75 are selfish. I mean, said it in an interview. And another thing about that I just learned a couple days ago that I found in the CARES Act, the Biden administration took, I believe it was around $20 or $30 million of taxpayer money and allocated it to pensions. Guess why? Because the pensions were empty. These federal pensions, that are supposed for people that are about to retire, were run dry. So they're in these CARES Acts and all of this money that's coming through from the COVID, they're replenishing money that was stolen, I believe, from us. Mm-hmm. And I knew a long time ago, somebody was on the show said, I think that they don't have money left in the Social Security and a lot of these federal pensions, union pensions, that the money's been squandered and you know, laundered. And then I just found out a few days ago that they snuck into the CARES Act to replenish the pensions with some of this money that was supposed to be for that. So this whole thing, there's so many layers to why I call it the plandemic happened. But Scott, one thing that I do that changed since last you were here is you were able to get more and more documentation. Was it hard? Were they giving you a hard time to get everything that you needed to actually put together all the pieces like you have now?
No, not in particular, but how it came about is Tom Renz got involved and he hired a medical malpractice nurse who reviewed all the records I had. And of course, I thought I had everything because I requested everything. And she said, after she reviewed them, she said, Scott, you're missing at least 1,000 pages. I said, well, how can that possibly be? She said, that's the way they do it. They'll never give you everything. So I said, could you help write another records request? And so she did. And so I sent that in and we got them very quickly within a couple of days. They've never resisted a record request. And there was 948 pages missing. And that's where we found where the doctor put the DNR on. So we called that the smoking gun because now we had the audit trail with exactly, you know, so we knew we put a DNR on her because, you know, you remember when Jessica had my wife and I on the phone and we're screaming, save our daughter. And they say she's DNR. And we say she's not DNR, save our daughter. So we knew somebody put a DNR on her, but then we found the smoking gun in those extra records.
Yeah. I mean, everyone out there, believe me, if you're watching this and you had a family member die in a hospital or in a nursing home, you should be doing everything you can to get their records. There are people collecting them out there. I know Erin is, and a couple other people are. Erin's actually, and a lot of people that were at Elmhurst Hospital are getting together to get, and they're really trying to get everyone's records from that hospital because something evil happened in that hospital. And it's not just her. A couple other people, thank God, have stepped up. But there was a time when it was only, when it was very few voices, but it does appear that people are starting, especially doctors and nurses, that are realizing that this is not going away and we're not giving up and there's enough voices out there fighting. So I say to doctors and nurses out there, if you were involved, I would come forward now. I don't believe that this is going to be another Holocaust, show trial, and people are going to get away and go through Argentina and build new lives in Canada or the US, because I don't think we're going to allow this to happen here. Scott, so how's the foundation doing? Talk a little bit about the foundation and what you're doing, because you have a bigger picture than just the COVID. You actually want to help families in general.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Thanks for that. So there was the foundation was actually thought of the week after Grace died, because our estate was going to take care of Grace after Cindy and I died. And so then we talked through, well, what are we going to do now? And so then we got the legal paperwork, started with the foundation. It was approved as a 501c3 back in March. We're working with a consultant now to get everything structured so that it's perfect. That hasn't stopped us from doing something, but what stopped us more than anything is that I'm working roughly 90 hours a week still on Grace's case and doing the interviews and the groundswell. And so just the time hasn't been able to be dedicated to the foundation, but I'm going to tell you about that anyway. But then also getting involved with the legal case, Tom Renz has now decided to take on the case. And so that hasn't occupied a lot of time yet, but that's coming up. But we did give the first gift, and it was a wonderful thing. Back on Memorial Day weekend, we had met a man that had a Down syndrome girl named Angel, and she happens to be the same age as Grace, 19.
Oh, wow.
And so we met them at a movie theater just by, you know, God's coincidence, and told them about our foundation and asked if there's anything we could do. And Al said, we'd really like to get a three-wheel bike for Angel. So uh-huh. We met them at a bike shop over Memorial Day weekend. She tried out a couple bikes. She got on one. And so we bought it. We took it out to their house. And she got on that thing, and one of the, you know, her name is Angel. So you take this, what I'm going to say. So it was like she was free. It was just complete freedom.
Wonderful.
And so I said, you know, when I was describing this about a month ago to one of the hosts, I said, she went like a bat out of hell. And and she said, didn't she go like a bat out of heaven? Her name was Angel.
That reminds me, because I know Grace loved horses and all of that. You know, I think she's with you every step of the way, and we're never going to let her go. You know, I'm so grateful that you're doing this. I think that you've really opened so many eyes. But I do believe that there's hundreds of thousands of victims, families out there, and they really have to figure out. They have to get their information. They have to. We cannot let this go. Again, I can't stress enough. If you did lose somebody in the hospital, don't take the hospital's word for it. I've talked to dozens of nurses, especially, and people, coroners, who were told to put COVID-19 as the cause of death. And it's not true. And it was told to them that they had to, and they knew that they were falsifying records. Again, also, if you falsified records and you work for the insurance company, it's a good time to come forward as well. So thank you so much, Scott. Thank you so much, Vera. I hope to see you again. I was looking for you, and then Scott said, I'm coming on with Vera. I was like, I've been looking for Vera. And now I know she lives down the street.
And here we are in New York, right?
Well, yeah, it's so great. I have a lot to talk to you about. And Scott, I am so, you are such a hero, and I know you're a hero for Grace, but you're actually doing so much for our country, and I think it's going to be partly, you know, I'm real good friends with Tom Renz, and he is such... The way he talks about you and your fight, I mean, you guys are some team, and you're going to get justice for Grace, but it's going to start, I think, a domino effect of justice for everyone. So thank you so much, Scott. And thank you so much, Vera. I really appreciate you both, and I'll see you both again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mel.
Guys, I've been warning for months and months about the World Economic Forum and the private Western Central Bank rate reset. On top of that, the ESG proposed by Larry Fink and BlackRock, which is the CCP social credit score tied to the central bank digital currency, which would end privacy and autonomy for all free people on planet Earth. Just recently at the World Economic Forum, these people got together and decided that not only will they have a central bank digital currency, but that it will be tied to a universal ID that every person on the planet would have to receive. This ID would track and trace everything from your financial life to your health records, to your social justice, to your environmental footprint, to everything that you can imagine, your business, your expenditures, your groceries, everything that you do in life would be monitored, tracked, and traced by these people in Davos, if they can get away with it. I don't believe they can, because we the people and God Almighty have the power. You have to make the moves today. Invest in silver and gold and other hard assets. Get your money into small banks, credit unions, and savings and loans that are local and benefit your local community. And start preparing in your home with supplies and whatever you need going forward. We the people and God Almighty will save this planet. But that means we have to take action steps to walk away from the central bank digital currency and their planned great reset. Do that today, please. God bless you and your family, and God bless and save America and all free people on planet Earth. No matter what, God wins, but we need to make the moves now. Please visit our friend Andrew and his team at Beverly Hills Precious Metals at melkgold.com. That's melkgold.com. I don't always talk about why I decided to partner with Mel Kay Superfoods, but I have a good friend of mine. You guys know her too, Ann Vandersteel. We were at an event and I'm looking at her thinking, what did you do different? She's glowing. She's so full of energy. And she told me about this amazing program. I didn't know. I just knew that I had seen her a month before, and a month later, she's on this program. And I said, I want whatever she's doing, whatever she has. And I got involved with Superfoods. I learned about it. You've seen my friend Raven on here before. She is an organic farmer who's very involved in the company. Really broke down for me how special these products are, where they come from, and what they could do. And within a short period of time, I felt like I too was feeling like I had an extra amount of energy. I felt that I was internally feeling like I had more digestion. I used to have different kinds of digestive issues. They all kind of went away. I didn't notice my hair, my nails, my skin. It all was improving. And the only thing that I had done was I added superfoods to my daily regimen. And that has been a total game changer for me in so many ways, including it is an excellent weight loss program if you are looking to lose weight, which I was when I first started, and you continue to maintain. And it's a completely regimented, easy to follow, results oriented program, but then it becomes a part of your lifestyle. At this point, it is to me like a part of waking up and going to work is also using my superfoods and doing my regimen. And I look forward to joining you guys on your journey to health and fitness as I'm on my journey to health and fitness. And we could not recommend it more. This is something that I really love and has really, really enhanced my life and my lifestyle. Go to MelKSuperfoods.com and join me in supercharging our wellness journey and living our best, healthiest lives ahead.
Hey, Patriot Pals, Rob Reilly here. One of the most important things Mel and I do in this war between good and evil is traveling the country, meeting fellow patriots like yourselves. We share stories, resources, gain new tools, make new friends, and get activated to take back our freedom for God and country. Go to themelkshow.com events and come join us. You will have an amazing experience and be reinvigorated to stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As always, God wins. See you there.